is Chris Elverum from the Minnesota Department of Health. Chris is the manager of the well management section, where he oversees the program that regulates the construction, maintenance, and sealing of wells and borings in Minnesota. He previously worked for the Met Council and is an environmental consultant in Wisconsin. He has a BS degree from the University of Wisconsin, Eau Claire, and an MS from the University of Kentucky, both in geology. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you. So I'm going to give and not use my yoga voice, because I know it's getting late and we'd probably all fall asleep, and maybe we'd rather just meditate for 15 minutes and be done with it, but I spent all this time, so you got to listen to it. And I'll try to pull together a few things that we've heard today and see if we can find the flying car at the end. So, in Minnesota, we all know we got a lot of beautiful lakes, the Lake Superior. We have found times going to the cabin, the Boundary Waters, things like that. We have the headwaters of the Mississippi, and the St. Anthony Falls shown here was the reason Minneapolis is where it is right now, the confluence of the Mississippi and Minnesota, Fort Snelling. So surface water, as others have alluded to, is really something we all see and value and really understand. And then we have poor little old groundwater down here at the bottom. And this is all you get to see most of the time. It's like, what is that thing in the yard I got to mow around? And most people, I find people that have a well don't even know they have a well. I don't know, or I don't get a bill. I guess I have a well. So most people don't know much about groundwater, and we play to that a little bit. Oh yeah, we're groundwater scientists, and surface water gets all the attention. And so. This was kind of born out after the Clean Water Land and Legacy Amendment was passed in 2008. Most of you are familiar with this. It provided funding for a number of different areas, including clean water. The Clean Water Fund is about a little over $100 million a year. And it did mention specifically groundwater and drinking water in the constitutional amendment. But once again, as the state organized its work, we adopted what's known as the watershed approach. And this was really to address the Clean Water Act, the TMDLs. And the state as a whole is going watershed by watershed, doing an assessment and monitoring, characterization. They then develop WRAPs, watershed restoration and protection strategies. Those feed into the local comprehensive plan, which are done by counties primarily, but more recently we've moving toward this one watershed, one plan, so that there aren't 200 and whatever plans, now there only be 81. But when we see this framework, 81's much less than 200 and whatever. Here we are, where's groundwater again? Oh, we get the sad face. There wasn't much thought put into what about groundwater? So state agencies realized this, us groundwater people thought, well, how can we can either fight them or join them. And we thought, we know groundwater is important. 75% of us use groundwater as our primary drinking water source. You heard earlier about this surveying that's been done of the SWCDs and other local governments. They all want to do groundwater stuff. 75%. So yeah, it's important to us. 74% say, well, we don't spend much time on it. And why is that? And I wasn't here this morning, so I didn't hear what they said, but they don't know much about it. They don't know what they're supposed to do with regard to it. There's all these different entities involved. We really don't know, it's too hard to wade through. We know how to take a water sample from a river and then put a buffer strip in to protect it. That's pretty straightforward. So the agencies got together and said, how can we just fit into that framework? And we all, groundwater doesn't behave on watershed boundaries, so we can't just use watersheds to organize our work. Okay, fine, let's put that aside. We can still do the work on whatever scale makes sense, but we cookie cutter that information out using the watershed as the boundary. And then, okay, so we can provide information to locals. That doesn't do them much good. They want to know what can they do on the land to protect groundwater. So we developed strategies, and it's a table, and I'll get into that in a little bit. And really pulling these things together and, thinking just to make the name relatively simple, we'll call it GRAPS, Groundwater Restoration and Protection Strategies, using the acronym close to WRAPS that was already existing. So people will have some understanding right away. So what's in a GRAPS? Well, first of all, GRAPS is currently a report. And I think that's something I will allude to at the end. I don't know, you know, we're doing them watershed by watershed. We can do better, I think. But it has all this background information, you know, just basic information from that we have statewide. We cut it out, or we talk about it, make maps. Information from the work that many of us do every day. You know, it comes from agriculture, it comes from DNR, PCA, you know, all the consultants. We have feedlots and contaminated sites, stuff from the what's in my backyard, what's in my neighborhood, I guess that is. And we provide that as maps. Again, those are cookie-cuttered out. There's statewide coverage of many of these things, but we just, you know, simply focus in on the areas that is important to the watershed. We also have water quantity stuff. You know, we were just talking about that now, water level data, water use trends, groundwater dependent surface water features. Just show them where those things are. Okay, well, that's the first step. Then how do we connect that to actions they can take? Well, I broke one of my cardinal sins of presentations. You can't read this, and I hate when people put something up and say they can't read it, so let's not dwell on it. But here's what the table looks like. And that contains the strategy. So now I'm going to walk you through how this works. Okay, so here's an example of the Cannon River. We have four completed GRAPS right now, and this is one of them. So here's an example of how this is statewide coverage of land cover. And we just took the watershed cookie cutter and gave them that map. Okay, that's an example of what's in there. So now, all right, we want to do something. We provide this to a local, this is the county typically, or SWCD. They want to do something to protect groundwater. They know that's important. They've heard that from the people involved. But what are they going to do? Well, they go to this extensive table, and they say, you could start in different ways. You could start with an issue. You could start with an area, a geographic area. But say you start with an issue, and you zoom in here, and you say, all right, I want to do something about nitrate. We've heard nitrate is an issue in the county and groundwater, and what can we do about that? Well, here is a strategy for you. And it's really, I don't know, it's the action maybe that's we could change that word to strategy, but promote adoption of cover crops for scavenging nutrients under irrigated row crop. All right, that sounds like a good thing. That sounds like it'll make a difference. Well, where do we do that? Well, if you zoom back into our table here, you can see focus on irrigators in areas with high pollution sensitive karst geology and vulnerable DWSMAs, drinking water supply management areas. Well, those are the maps that we provide in this report. So if you click on, let's just say, the pollution sensitivity map, this is again a statewide coverage that we've simply cut out to provide for the watershed. So if you were going to do something to protect groundwater from nitrate, you would use this map as a starting point. You could also use the land cover map to see, well, where does, you know, where are there intensive agriculture that overlies this pollution sensitive area? Then you could overlay the DWSMA map. You could say, well, if we really only have a limited amount of resources, we can prioritize by those areas that have a vulnerable drinking water supply management area for a community public water supply. And you might say, oh, around the Northfield area, there's some agriculture. You layer these things. There's some agriculture, sensitive soils, and a vulnerable drinking water supply management area. That's where we're going to start. We're going to focus on talking to irrigators and putting in cover crops so that they can scavenge nutrients. And then that, you know, then how they actually go out and do that is kind of the work they already do. They do this for surface water management. They, you know, and some of these things can also benefit surface water. So then they start thinking, well, you know, we also have runoff in this area that, you know, contributes to the TMDL in the Cannon River. So if we really focus on this area, we can start, you know, maximizing our benefits and have multiple benefits. Another example. So we want to do something about water quantity. We've heard there's DNR said, oh, there's a lot of pumping and the groundwater levels are going down. And we would provide that information, water level observation well data. Well, what can we do? Well, let's zoom in down here. Groundwater sustainability assists farmers applying for an appropriation permit by developing a resource plan that identifies water conservation measures and measures that improve use efficiencies and reduce water demand. So, okay, that will help reduce the amount of water that's pumped out of the aquifer for irrigation. Well, where again? Where should we do that? Go back to the table. You find that it says prioritize areas of high use water use intensity by agricultural irrigators. There's a map. You click on that link, and voila, this is from the DNR's MPARS system, and you can see that the green circles represent irrigators, and the larger the circle is, the bigger the appropriation permit. Well, that makes sense. Let's start up there. So we can focus in on an area and an issue and target our efforts to reduce demand. And you might also find a water level map or observation wells where you can see trends in water levels. You might use that to further focus and say, well, we know water levels are declining in this area and there's a lot of irrigation, and that's where we should focus our efforts. So we are in the process of delivering this to local, again, I call it, they're still counties, even though they're doing it as a one watershed, one plan. So a group of counties will get together and plan on a watershed scale. That's the future of local water management planning, and it's happening right now. And so we're delivering it to those that entity that is now the watershed that's planning together. But it's really the counties and the SWCDs that are implementing the work. So here's your flying car, Ellen. And I didn't even hear you or know you were going to talk about the Jetsons this morning, but you know, as a child of the 70s and 80s, this is what I watched and thought we'd be flying those. But what was it, 63 or something? 2062, so we got plenty of time to reach this. All right, well, you know, as I said earlier, these are reports right now, and you can find them online. Well, I think we can do better than that. We don't need to just prepare a report for each of these. What we need to give them are the resources and the tools to do this. The maps, for the most part, are there, and they're statewide. I don't know, some of you, I don't know if anybody talked about WAF today, but this Watershed Health Assessment Framework is a web page, website that you can go and find many different layers, map layers that you could turn on and off. There are actually a lot of the layers that we use for GRAPS are in there now. And so if we can somehow package those in a way that local water planner can go in there and say, I just want to click on this button to zoom into my watershed and just have the maps that are relevant to my planning for groundwater, and then give them the strategies table, which is already exists. You know, some of strategies won't be relevant in some areas. There's no karst in some parts of the state, clearly, so, you know, they'd have to take that with a grain of salt. But, you know, we can provide the whole table. It's the key is then what is that clever way to connect those things? And right now it's a report, but I think there's some other way, and people far smarter than me will be able to figure this out. It's just going to be, you know, how do they interpret the map and the strategy and then, you know, go on to implement. These are big components. There's another component that was discussed earlier about outreach and education. We need the local implementers to understand so that they can go out and talk to the landowners, because ultimately that's where the work gets done. An SWCD person goes out and convinces a landowner to do this activity on their land, and they have to understand enough to tell them why it's important and what will be the benefit. And so we can provide this, but there's another piece that we need to provide, and that's education for the local governments who are implementing it, for the decision makers who have to support that. We have to give them enough information so that they understand and endorse the activities. There has to be money. All of this depends on money, and right now, most of the money that is used to implement the local water management plans comes through the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and it is available to do groundwater activities. However, again, when they don't know what to do, they don't fully understand it, they fall back to what they know. So We have to make sure that that money is available and that they have the resources and understanding to do something about it. So I guess I didn't need the extra time. Maybe we'll get out early. Thank you. It's going to be a softball, right, Brian?
Absolutely, Chris. Nice job. So given Tim's presentation on the camp process, going out and talking with folks, how do you think these, how would a GRAPS blend with a camp? Do you think those two could go together?
Yeah, I do. I think, one of the things that we hear all the time is, and we've talked about it already today, that there's all these different agencies, and they're coming to us for different things. So we all need to start thinking broadly. We shouldn't just go out and talk about aquifer levels and what they can do to manage that. We should talk about this comprehensively. So the camp model might be a good model, and it might be something that we should think about applying more broadly. We should use whatever mechanism it is. We don't want DNR to go there and then the health department to go there and then the PCA and then Bowser comes. So how can we deliver this information and use community engagement, use outreach and education to provide groundwater strategies, ultimately, with more comprehensively. So camp, something else, I don't have a strong opinion on that, but I do feel strongly that we should be doing this together.
Chris, how's sales of your reports going?
What, where is he? Oh, how's what going?
How's sales of your reports going?
Sales? Well, they're not exactly flying off the shelves. This is really it has been well received. Part of this effort is to get feedback on the reports that we have, so it's a kind of a continuous improvement. It's really geared toward a very small population. This is really just the local water planners. And I think, Carrie Raber's back there, and she's really leading this project for us. I think for those that have had a completed GRAPS, that's been fairly well received, would you say? And so we're not going to make a lot of money off of it, that's for sure, selling them.
Yeah, Chris, this is great. Say, you're not the only one that's brought up education and outreach. I've heard it in three talks now. Is there any role, is this mostly a role for state agencies, do you think, or is there any role for Minnesota Groundwater Association?
That's a good question. Well, my experience with I would invite anyone who wants to fill that role to be able to do so. And when it comes down to it, as we all know, the Groundwater Association is made up of all of us, and it comes down to the people that are going to be there. And the agencies have a vested interest in doing it. We've enlisted the Freshwater Society and others, and so I think it probably can be delivered well by some other entities. It really kind of depends on who those people are and their interests. But I would encourage the Groundwater Association to think about that if we can use your expertise to deliver things.
Chris, you say report. I assume that means something, some web-based hypertext type document that there's things are cross-referenced. You're not
we
talking about a phone
phone
book size document. That I mean, that's
I don't know how many times we printed it, but yes, it is essentially it's a electronic document. And yeah, all those things are hyperlinked internally, and I think the external links are also there. So it's not, but I'm sure we've printed a few out, or somebody, if you give them that, somebody's going to print it out and want to hold on to it. And, maybe we don't get around that for some time. And at the same time, I think ultimately it's a web-based resource that we really should be thinking about for the future. We don't print them out for a lot of people now.